What was it that fellow Merlin was talking about the other day said? Lock Island frowned, trying to remember the man's name. Napoleon? Something like that, anyway. The High Admiral's frown turned into a grimace at his inability to remember the name. Yet, as he pondered the other side's command arrangements, he understood exactly what, whatever his name was, had meant when he called another general fortunate because he only had to fight coalitions. Any coalition's only as good as its coordination, he thought. And until the group of four have been smacked around enough, I don't think they're likely to do the kind of arse-kicking necessary to make something like the Harchongese Navy coordinate with anybody. For that matter, I don't know if anyone short of God or a genuine archangel could kick that kind of aristocratic arse. The thought was comforting, but only until he remembered that only 19 of the 93 armed galleons coming his way were Harchongese. The other 74 had all been built, armed, and manned by the Temple Lands. That was another kraken entirely, and not just because of the difference in the officers' corps involved either. The Temple Lands had officially abolished serfdom decades ago. Despite that, there were still serfs on virtually every major Temple Lands estate. They just weren't called that. By the same token, there were still men in Emerald and even Chisholm who were called serfs, but who'd actually become small landowners in their own rights. In fact, the phased abolition of the legal status of serf, a firm requirement of the Carisian Empire, had raised scarcely a ripple in Emerald or Chisholm. Within another 2 years, the process would be completed. The situation was a little more complicated in Coruscant, and especially Zebediah, where the conditions of serfdom had varied widely between one feudal territory and another. There'd been no serfs at all in Manchir, Tartarian, or Aerith, for example, and the institution had been very similar to the Chisomian variety in Rocaire, Chorus, Barcaire, and Anvil Rock, and on Winddaughter Island. It probably wasn't a coincidence that almost all the knights who joined the Northern Conspiracy in Coruscant practiced a rather more severe version of serfdom, on the other hand, and phasing it out in Coruscant was going to take longer. But they not only had serfs in Harchong, they had outright slaves, lots of them. Whereas Karis, and Emerald, Chisholm, and Coruscant, in varying degrees, had a bustling, vibrant free labor force, supporting a steadily growing middle class, as well as wealthy entrepreneurs like Edward Houseman. Harchong had vast slave-worked plantations, and the workforce in Harchongese manufactories was almost always composed of slave laborers as well. There was no Harchongese middle class, no free labor force, and definitely no equivalent of the Carisian treasure chest of experienced seamen. Harchongese warships were crewed by men who'd literally been driven aboard with the lash in many cases, and who were controlled by a brutal, often capricious discipline, which would have provoked an almost instant mutiny aboard any Carisian vessel. And not surprisingly, their crews gave them exactly the degree of loyalty and initiative they deserved. There might be a modicum of enthusiasm, or at least willingness, aboard the IHN's ships now that the group of four had declared holy war. The deep reservoir of faith among the Harchongese peasantry and serfs was one of the things which held the empire together, and the priests aboard those ships had appealed fervently to that faith. Yet dumb acceptance of brutal conditions, even born of religious fervor, was no substitute for the enthusiasm and high morale which routinely prevailed aboard Carisian warships.